Good afternoon. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and we've got a fabulous topic today. We're going to talk about ravens, our urban neighbors who are noisy and opinionated and have big personalities. And we really notice them in winter, and at this time of year, they're in courtship, so they're doing all kinds of interesting behavior. So I am hoping to hear from people who have maybe been mocked by a raven or maybe tried to answer back to a raven. We'd love to hear from you on the program today, or if you've got questions, because we've got an expert in the studio with us today. Lisa Peugeot from the U.S. Geological Survey is in the studio with me. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Her affection for birds goes way back, but we'll hear about that in a little while. I'm really excited because I've been reading about ravens for a couple of days now just to get ready for the show. And among the topics that we want to make sure we cover today, and I'm going to throw these out for our listeners so that if they have another one they want us to cover, let us know. But we're going to talk about their intelligence. These are considered to be one of the most intelligent birds out there. They have amazing acrobatic skills, which are really on display this time of year and downtown, you know, around downtown office buildings. Their dietary preferences tend to go toward human junk food. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about their language. I guess language is the wrong word for it. It's really vocalizations, but they have a lot of them, and they're being studied a lot by scientists. So there's a lot to cover with ravens. They're really active and really visible and in your face in Anchorage most of the time in winter. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a raven story or a raven memory, something that you want to share. We'd love to hear from you at 550-8433. And I really do think people have been mocked by ravens. So if you think you've been mocked by a raven, give us a call. If you're statewide, you can call 1-888-353-5752 or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Lisa, let's just talk a little bit about you and your background and how you know so much about ravens. Are you from Anchorage?
Yeah, I am. Yes, I grew up here.
Born and raised in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And then you studied here or did you go outside?
No, I stayed here. I went to both UAA and then APU.
So, and did you get a biology degree?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And then you began working in the field.
Right.
And was it always birds?
It was, yeah. From an early on, you know, kindergarten, preschool, I used to draw birds or write little stories about them. So I've always been fascinated with them.
You're so lucky that you got to grow up and do the thing that you like.
Yes, I do feel very lucky.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I understand it, you're kind of an expert in corvids, which would include ravens, but not be limited to ravens.
Correct, yeah.
And what are the other birds in that family?
Up here in Alaska, we have northwestern crows, black-billed magpies, stellar jays, and gray jays.
And they're all kind of related. They're cousins.
All, mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, all in the corvid family.
But today we're mostly talking about ravens. The other thing you mentioned that I think people might be curious about is the hooked beak chickadee problem that's going on. You've been doing some work on that.
Right. That's at the USGS, the Alaska Science Center. That's been our primary work for the last 12, 13 years.
And that's worth its own show, I would say. You know, I mean, that's such an interesting what's going on. So we won't deviate from our favorite topic today, ravens. In fact, I'm just going to jump to some phones because we have actually gotten a couple of people who've called in.
Wow.
Kaylee, you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
Hi.
Hi.
I actually called and I thought it was really great that both your guys' subject matter. My husband is a garbage man here in Anchorage. And so we have a very large conflicting argument on our personal take on ravens. I think they're amazing and beautiful and intelligent. And he deals with sometimes pulling onto a street and there's been a group of ravens that have actually knocked over garbage cans and pulled the trash out. And so it's pretty funny. We have this back and forth in our house where I'm like, oh, look at how pretty the ravens are. And he's like, oh, those stupid birds.
I think he's got a legitimate complaint, don't you, Lisa?
Yeah. part of what makes ravens so successful here in Anchorage is that they're so smart. They know wherever there are humans, there's going to be food. And they know the exact time of when the garbage is going to be put out or be picked up or when the restaurant is going to unload their dumpster or fill it up. So they're really cued into what we do, and then that provides them their food for the winter.
So we should help your husband out and tell people to put the lid on their trash cans.
That's right.
That's the thing. They can actually get the lid open. He's watched them push the lids off of the trash cans and open and then push it over. He's seen them work together in teams to do that.
Bad, bad Raven. Well, I'm with you. I think they're amazing. And maybe their mischief, we can identify with their mischief too, because we're mischievous people too. So, but anyway, is there something that is your favorite thing they do?
It is. It's when they kind of lean forward and almost do like that clicking noise. It's like a boop, boop sort of thing. I love that. I think it's so, I don't know, just something about that sound.
That's great.
Me, I guess.
You know, some of the research I did, that sounded a little bit like what young ravens will call when they're hungry. It was spelled R-U-H-R-U-H, and that sounded a little bit, or even a mother on a nest might call that asking for her mate to come and bring food. So, but we don't know. We're speculating here. So, well, Kaylee, thanks so much for that call.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it. I'm going to welcome Jackson. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi, how's it going? I have a good topic that I'd like to hear you guys talk about with just the fact that they like to play, kind of like how dolphins like to play in the water.
Yeah.
And I actually witnessed that one time in the Grand Canyon. We were camping on a ridge, and there was some really strong updrafting wind, like to the point where if you stood over the cliff, it would blow your hat off of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And these ravens were coming in above our head, and with their wings tucked, just in a full dive, and they would hit that wind, and then they would open their wings, and they would just soar up into the, like, 2,000 feet into the air and just disappear.
Wow.
And then they would come back and do it again. They did it over and over and over, and it was almost like they were showing off for us. They were doing it right over our heads.
Oh, that's so cool.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
And I have another quick story, and it was a pretty amazing thing. It was one of my best friend's dad was a tattoo artist, and he really had a thing with ravens, and he had a tattoo done on his arm. And he didn't want a perfect specimen of a raven, and so he told the tattoo artist that was giving him the tattoo to just have something wrong with it. And so the guy just picked it to have a broken left leg. And 14 years later, he woke up in the middle of the night and was walking this trail that he used to walk out by his house. And this was down in New Mexico. And he came across this raven that had a broken left leg and was basically dying. And he picked up the raven, and just totally, the raven didn't struggle at all, just totally let him pick him up, and he took it back to his house and nursed it back to health, and he had that raven for about 10 years.
Amazing story.
He built a cage for it. It was really cool.
Wow, wow. Is the raven still alive today?
It's not, no.
Oh,
no, it got electrocuted, actually.
Oh, dear. That is a problem. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
both of those are great stories.
After that raven disappeared, they found little stashes of, like, screws and all his little tools and little shiny objects in, like, little tree spots around their house. They kept finding these little stashes of all these little shiny objects.
He'd been busy.
Yeah. he was a smart one, for sure.
Oh, those are both really great stories, Jackson. Thanks a lot. I love the acrobatics. We'll talk some more about acrobatics here and what it is about their wings maybe that let them do that and what we know about why they do it. And thanks
one
again.
Quick, yeah. More question, too, is is it true, I've heard, that if you split their tongue that they can actually talk like a parrot?
That's kind of an old wives' tale. Their ravens are smart enough, if they like a sound, they will imitate it, or they'll pick it up.
So you don't have to split their tongue.
No, no.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Had you heard that old wives' tale before?
I have, yeah. Okay. I've heard it about magpies and crows as well, so it's
out there. Yeah. I know that we'll talk about sounds too, because some of what I've read is that they're able to imitate very well, and there are stories about them imitating the sound of a motorcycle revving up, or there was one story about a raven going 1, 2, 3, and then like an explosive sound. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that in the area they'd been clearing avalanches. And so they were literally doing 1, 2, 3, and then an explosion. And so this raven just liked that sound, you know, and just made it his own. So anyway, those are really great. Thanks a lot, Jackson.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Great. You too. We're going to go to Angela from Willow. Hi, Angela. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hello. I just wanted to share a quick story, and also if anybody is interested in learning more about ravens, the best book I found was by Bernard Heinrich, and he goes into great detail, and it's very easy to understand. It is one of the best books I've read about birds. And also, I wanted to share a small story. somebody told me that their neighbor heard from, like, an old Native woman that to kill or harm a raven brings bad luck.
Mm.
And he actually killed a raven and ate it. And that year, he lost his crop and got in a car crash. So
it seemed like it came true, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, don't cross a raven. That's the message. There's some, you know, but I want to comment on those two books or that author, Bernd Heinrich. He's written two books. One is called Raven in Winter, and the other is The Mind of the Raven. They are great. They're in the local libraries here. I found them easily and read pieces of them. They're big books. They're 300 or 400 pages, but he's very easy to read and understand. He's clearly really trying to understand these birds, and he's a scientist himself. I think he's retired from the University of Vermont, but really, really good things. And those are listed on alaskapublic.org. Plus, we've got a lot of other local articles that have been written about our local ravens here. So I would encourage folks to go to alaskapublic.org and look at the Hometown Alaska promo for today's show, and you'll find really, really good things to read. So thanks a lot, Angela. That's a great suggestion. All right, take care. Thank you. Well, got a lot of action right off the bat.
That was great.
One of the things I'd like to do, when I was getting ready for the show, a lot of people said, oh, you know what I really want to know about ravens? I want to know where they go at night. And that seems to be a fairly common question. Mm-hmm. So in doing some research, well, actually, I want to read this one little passage from one of our local journalists who did a really extensive story working with Rick Sinnott, who was the Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist and who worked a lot with urban wildlife. He's retired now. And anyway, let me just read these two paragraphs, because the ravens leave at night and they come back in the morning. And this is just sets the stage so well for that. So listen up, folks. Anchorage ravens begin their commute at dawn. As an orange glow backlights the Chugach Mountain skyline, the blackbirds rise into air liquid with cold. They cruise toward the glittering city in straight lines, as single-minded as wage slaves late for work. At least 1,000 birds move at once, as furtive and quiet as large bats, following the creek drainages into town. Call it corvid rush hour. By full sunrise, they have dispersed, flapping up the boulevards, drifting down the parkways, searching for the gooey jetsam of modern human life. By true daylight, the ravens are claiming perches throughout the town, on light poles overlooking fast food joints, snow berms beside grocery stores, dumpsters of all sizes and contents. The party lasts all day. I feel like that's just kind of what's going on in Anchorage just about every day. By the way, that was by Doug O'Hara, who had his own science website, and he has a long piece about ravens there, and Rick Sinnott's efforts to find out really what happens to ravens at night. Do you know much, Lisa, about it?
I know a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the unique things about the Anchorage area is there's a ton of food available for ravens. So in other parts of the world where ravens roost together, they can have roosts of 1,000-plus birds, and they're usually in places where there's not as much food. So they have to have those communal areas where they're communicating to one another, oh, I found food, such and such place, there's a carcass over here, follow me in the morning. But here in Anchorage, there's so much food, or that's what Rick Sinnott found, is that they don't need to coalesce
exactly
in those huge numbers. So they may have smaller roosts where there's one or two birds here or there.
Right, right. In the research I did, I found that he got a grant from Fort Richardson, mm-hmm. which Fort Richardson wants to know about the animals that live on their base, and so they gave him a grant to sort of figure out where the ravens were going, and it turned out they're not hanging around Fort Richardson at all, because Rick said that's because there's only one fast food restaurant at each of the bases, you know, mm-hmm. so there's just not enough for them to draw the ravens in. So anyway, he spent a lot of money, captured up to 60 ravens, and mm-hmm. put little tiny transmitter backpacks on them, and was able to follow them for about 2 years, and in that time never found a giant roost. Mm-hmm. He really thought he would, but he found clumps of them, but never a roost.
Right.
Anybody who does any reading out of Fairbanks, Sherry Simpson has a great story called, Telling Raven Stories, and she talks about roosts of 800 or 450 ravens north of town. But apparently they have their garbage under control in Fairbanks, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. But yes, they never really, really found the same kind of, you know, experience of clumps, thousands of ravens in an area. Right. By the way, one thing Rick has mentioned and has been reported in many stories is that that we have about 2,000 ravens in winter. Mm-hmm. That sound like a good number to you?
Yeah, the last the Christmas bird count that we have here every year was done in December. Their number was about 1,200.
1,200, right.
So for the Anchorage area.
So I'm going to go to Jerry. Jerry, you're calling from Seward. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I just have a great story about ravens. I was in Scammon Bay, which is west of Bethel, and it's right on the Bering Sea there. And it was in the spring, and I had my scope and my binoculars, and out of town there a little bit, there are these rock formations called tors, and they basically are like building blocks of rock that just shoot out of the tundra. Well, there was one that was probably 50 or 60 feet high. As I walked over there, I noticed that some ravens were kind of dive bombing up to the top of one. So I figured there might be something to eat up there. There were like 7 or 8 ravens. And then I had my scope right on the top of that tor. And in view of my scope came this hawk. It was a rough-legged hawk. And it came diving right down to that tor too. And so the ravens and the hawk were kind of, they weren't fighting really. The hawk would dive as fast as it could and kind of scare them away. And they played this game over the top of this thing. So as I watched, the ravens systematically herded this rough-legged hawk out of there. I mean, when I looked up, they had it encircled. They had a complete circle around this hawk, and they kind of herded it out. They kind of carried it away.
They never really attacked it?
No.
Mm-hmm.
They just systematically had formed this kind of invisible corral around this hawk and just escorted it away from there.
And that was that. Well, Lisa, what do you think about that behavior?
Well, it could be very likely that they had territories there, and they didn't approve of having the hawk there, and they just wanted him out of the area.
And they collaborate like that with one another. They work like a team.
They will, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they'll do similar behaviors for large mammals too, if they think they're too close to them, or eagles, or they will work together when necessary.
Wow. So you witnessed a pretty interesting opportunity there, Jerry.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty fun to show you how they cooperated.
Yeah.
They worked together they escorted this hawk right out of there.
Yeah, yeah. No argument, right? you're out of here. Well, thank you, Jerry, for calling and sharing that story. That is great. Well, we've got a lot of people interested in talking about ravens, so we're going to take a few more calls as we go along here. Joanne, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hey, thank you so much. This is such a great show today. It's really wonderful.
Oh, good.
To hear you talk about our state bird.
Yeah.
It should be our state bird.
It should be our It's the People's Choice state bird.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, we live up on top of the mountain, and we watch them go down and come up every day, and it's wonderful to watch them. And, you know, I grew up with a pet crow, and so as a child, my school bus, my crow used to follow me into school, and I'd have to call my mother to come and collect him and take him back after he ended up in the principal's office.
Oh!
So it was really wonderful, but the ravens are so big and beautiful, and we're so lucky to have them, and that's just all that I wanted to say.
Well, you know, the purpose of the show really was kind of a raven appreciation, because, like you, I just enjoy them, and I'm here all winter long. I'm not in Hawaii. I'm here in Anchorage.
Yeah,
and so it's just kind of, I don't know, I feel some companionship with them. And so I just thought it would be fun. And then as I did research, you find so much written about them, and they are so intriguing. They're just, there's a reason why we find them fascinating. So thanks for your story, Joanne. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Now.
Bye-bye. And one more call. By the way, I'm just going to throw the number out for folks because people do want to talk about Ravens today. 550-8433. Or you can send us an email at hometownatalaskapublic.org. I'd like to welcome Roger to the show. This is Hometown Alaska. Roger.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an interesting Raven story. Many years ago, I was watching some ravens circling around overhead, and there were four or five of them that zoomed in kind of like jet fighters coming in for an attack, and they landed very quickly on a roof where that I could see, and a bunch of pigeons escaped, and the ravens watched the pigeons fly away, but one raven stayed on that roof, and he sat right at the edge of an overlap. And underneath that overlap, there was a pigeon that was still in there that hadn't left. And he patiently waited. He jumped down on the next level so he could look in and make sure the pigeon was there. And then he jumped back up on top of that ledge right above the location where the pigeon was and waited. Finally, the pigeon made a run for it, and the raven attacked the pigeon with his beak. Feathers flew everywhere, and I thought for sure the pigeon was dead. But the pigeon somehow escaped the clutches of the raven. So that reminded me that they don't just eat garbage and they don't eat just plant materials, but they're also, they can attack a live animal. That's my story.
Wow, that's impressive. What do you think about that, Lisa?
No, he's absolutely right. Ravens, one of the things that makes them so successful is they're opportunistic. So if there's a carcass, they'll feed on that. But they're also really excellent hunters. And they're with their wing design, their body shape, their really strong bills, they are capable of hunting similar to a hawk or a falcon.
Wow, wow. Well, thanks a lot, Roger. That was kind of a stunning display that you got to witness.
It was very surprising to be able to watch that.
Yeah. Do we know of any ravens ever attacking humans?
It's not very common, but it's typically occurs with scientists that are trying to study them.
I see.
And it's usually they're so smart that they can actually recognize individuals. And so if say Rick Sinnott, when he was studying the ravens, they recognized him and they would know to avoid him. Or say if I wanted to do a nesting study on young ravens, I would have to do. And have to dress myself up as a different person every day because they would recognize me and they would attack me.
Oh my gosh!
I was not where I was supposed to be.
So. We know who you are and we know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Roger. Really appreciate your phone call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care. Wow, that's just, you know, I'm taken with how much observation people in Anchorage are doing, and mm-hmm. it's great, and they're excited to tell their story. So let's talk a little bit. Let's use some of your background and experience. Let's talk about their intelligence. They're called a songbird, which I don't think mm-hmm. of them as a songbird, but they make their sounds come out like individual vocalizations rather than songs.
Right. Yeah, they're actually in the order songbirds or passer forms. They're the largest of the songbirds. So that, yeah, you're right. They don't have a pretty song like a warbler or a sparrow, but they're this combination of characteristics that put them in that group.
Right. But let me not deviate from intelligence because I'm just fascinated by how smart they are. I wanted to tell folks there's a video on alaskapublic.org where you can see a raven. It's just about a 2-minute video. A fisherman puts a stick, you know, crosswise over a hole with a string going down in, and he's trying to fish in that ice hole. And he goes away, and a raven comes up and pulls the string up and steps on the part he's pulled up and then pulls up another part and steps on that mm-hmm. until he gets the fish. Mm-hmm. And it's a PBS video. It must be true. But when I was reading in Bernd Heinrich's book, The Mind of the Raven, he did some serious work trying to understand their intelligence with a string test like this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that part?
I have.
Yeah. I think he used salami.
That sounds right.
First he tried it on wild birds, but I don't believe they would ever go for it. They would just watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had birds in an aviary, and he worked with them. And he was trying to figure out if it was just learned behavior or whether it was instinctual or, excuse me, just what it was. Mm-hmm. Do you remember much about that?
A little bit. And I think what he found out, and other people have since discovered too, is that ravens are really good at problem solving on the fly,
uh-huh.
and so they can figure things out as they need to figure things out, you know, throughout mm-hmm. the day. So they may use previous experiences that they've had to figure out, oh, if they move this stick this way, then this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not necessarily that they're watching other ravens and learning how to do it, it's that they're figuring out on their own
mm-hmm.
how to.
And one other aspect of the study was after they got used to doing it with a little piece of salami at the bottom of the string that they would pull up,
mm-hmm.
then he did two strings, one with a rock and one with a piece of salami, and mm-hmm. they quickly didn't pull up the rock, they pulled up the salami. Then he did something where if you pulled up the rock string, it actually pulled up the mm-hmm. you know, he crossed the strings, and they quickly figured that out. Mm-hmm. So that does suggest like they can figure it out on the fly.
Yeah. And that some of the a lot of work that's been done with corvids, ravens and crows in particular, is the theory that their brain size compared to their body size is so large because historically they've had to exist in environments that are always changing, and for them to survive they've had to be problem solvers. They have to be able to judge what their neighbor is going to do, what the environment is going to throw at them, and so the problem solving has helped them to be so successful, and why for ravens, you know, they're found all over the Northern Hemisphere.
Right. I know that one of the links on our website tells the story of Stacia Bakenstow, who was a researcher up on the North Slope, who was up there studying, you know, that they followed humans up there, basically, because there was still food up there, and she was just mm-hmm. studying them. And she tells very funny stories, or journalists have written funny stories that she told mm-hmm. about the kind of costuming she had to do to, you know, get out among the ravens. Once mm-hmm. she caught them, they knew who she was. So I'm going to welcome Jack Dalton onto the show. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you, Kathleen.
So I know that your email, for example, is ravenfeathers.com, so I know that you know something about ravens. So what do you want to tell us about today, Jack?
Well, it's and I've just caught the last little part of the conversation, but I think the one thing to really point out is the fact that raven plays such a huge role in the cultures of Alaska. And oftentimes, so when I'm performing raven stories, people will say, "Well, why do you think raven, you know, was chosen, quote unquote, by humans as the creator in this area?" And the intelligence you were just talking about, I think, plays a big role in that. You know, if you're going to be a first human being that's plopped down in the middle of the Arctic and you have to learn how to survive, who do you want to teach you how to survive? You're going to want the smartest animal around, and so those were ravens. And so I think that's why, and you see this in cultures around the world, you know, in places sort of south of, I call the territories in Canada, you see raven stories turning into coyote stories.
Mm.
You have stories of spiders being, you know, and these are all sort of the most clever animals around. And I think that's why these animals make their way into the mythological traditions of various cultures, because of their intelligence.
Yeah, you know, I told listeners that we did a lot of reading to get ready for the show, and Sherry Simpson has a wonderful story, and in it she talks about the Dena Athabaskan version includes raven makes land, raven gets fire, raven gets the sun, raven makes women from men, raven courts the willow grouse woman but marries the goose woman, raven becomes the moon, raven brings home his own guts, bursts with soup of his own guts and pretends to die. I mean, it's just, you know, not only is a creator, but he's a trickster.
Right. And that's the other part. Not, you know, when you have great intelligence and, you know, you got to entertain yourself in the wilderness, you're going to do tricky things. And I think that's why, you know, why it's characters, if you want to call them that, are so endearing because they are both very, very wise, very smart, but also, you know, tricky. And one thing I love about raven stories is I think it's that they become such a great metaphor, or any of the creator trickster stories, is they're such a great metaphor for humanity. You know, humans are incredibly intelligent. Humans have a great propensity, a great ability to create, but we're also our own worst enemy. And those are shown through so clearly in the Raven stories of always being your own worst enemy. And yes, you can do all these things, but in the end, your own greed or your own vanity or your own whatever ends up working against you. And you know, when you look at these stories as being stories to help us not make mistakes, whatever those mistakes are, Raven just becomes such a great metaphor.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. Well, it's like lessons all around. I know in one place I read, we know more from myth and culture about ravens than we actually know for sure about the science of the study of ravens, because they've been written about by so many cultures for so long. Jack, we're going to need to take a break here, but I wanted to let folks know about your program. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it's just so you picked a great week to have a Raven show, because this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll be performing Raven Returns, the story of the human beings, which is Raven is telling the entire history of the Yupik culture from creation through to the present day out north.
Oh, that's great. So once again, the Raven linked with the human being, huh? Will there be lessons in this, Jack? Do you think that's the sort of tone of it?
What it does, yeah, definitely a lot of lessons. The way I say is that because it deals with the entire history, it goes from, you know, the creation stories and then pre-contact Yupik history, then post-contact Yupik history, and then modern Yupik times. And the things that we're dealing with in modernity really speak to all of humanity in terms of you know, how do you deal with things like loss of culture, loss of spirituality, things like that, and how Raven and the Raven stories can help us, you know, by listening to stories, whether they're Yupik stories or from wherever, that if you really invite stories into your life, then a lot of issues can be solved.
Hmm. Well, that's great. So this weekend at Out North at Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, that's great. And I imagine that it's on their website.
It's on their website. Centertix.net is where you can get tickets, and look forward to seeing people there.
All right, Jack. Thanks so much for calling in and offering that perspective, because we had not had that yet. So thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome. Anytime.
All right. Thank you. So I see that the artist whose work we featured on the website, Shara Doris, has called in. So we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Shara Doris, who has a beautiful piece of artwork that I fell in love with a couple years ago that we posted on our website. So we'll be right back. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and Lisa Pajot from the U.S. Geological Survey and an expert on corvids and a friend of Raven's is in the studio with us, and she has a lot of background. We have lots of calls coming in with people who want to tell stories, and please hang on, because we'll try to get to you. If for some reason we don't get to you, we invite you to just, you know, cut and paste that story right onto the alaskapublic.org website, right under the story, so that people can, you know, they can come to the story and continue to read your contributions. We'll try to get to as many of your stories as you can, so if you're hanging on, please do, and we have got a number of emails as well, so we'll be working toward them. I do want to welcome Shara Doris on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Shara.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm in your debt, because I have loved that postcard that I picked up at your shop one first Friday a couple years ago, and, you know, stuck it up on a bulletin board and loved it all this time. And when I you know, realized I was going to be able to have a Raven show, I called Sharon and asked her, could I please post that on the web so people can enjoy it? And so it turns out that it's been a pretty popular item for you, right?
It has been. The Ravens in general have been really popular for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, this Raven is perched on the handlebars of a bicycle. So I know you happen to organize your life so that you can ride your bike to work. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm actually fortunate enough to be able to ride my bike to work. I live right on the trail system. I can ride all the way down, and I work downtown. So I feel like the Ravens have definitely been a big part of that, because when I get downtown, the Ravens in my neighborhood are kind of on the smaller side, but the ones downtown are just massive and huge, and I notice them every day when I ride my bike, and I see them on the sidewalk or on the street messing with something, and so they've been an inspiration to me. And that design that you have is part of a bigger picture that has my route into work. It's got the trails and the mountain and the Raven and the bicycle and kind of how I see things in Alaska.
You know, I remember when I chatted with you about this, I said, well, what inspired that? And you described a scene that you were watching from your house, I think, about some Raven behavior. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah. It had been a few years ago, and it had just snowed, and I'm really drawn to things that are kind of a stark black and white. And I was sitting in my studio, and I was looking out the window, and I had my notepad, and I was kind of ready to start drawing, and I was trying to think of what I wanted to draw for the day. And I looked outside, and there were these two ravens, and they were in my neighbor's yard. It was trash day, and they were sitting on top of this black trash bag and kind of methodically working together to move that garbage bag to the street. And then once they got it into the middle of the street, they ripped it open and just went to town on everything that was in the bag. And as I was watching that, I was thinking, wow, I think I need to honor that moment today, because it was really exciting to watch. And so I drew a couple of ravens that ended up on a shirt that I was doing, and it has been one of my more popular shirts. It was kind of a limited run, and I get requests for it still, and that was 3 years ago, I think. But since that moment, I think I started to notice ravens a lot more, and they've ended up on a lot of things that I'm working on.
Truly an inspiration for you, huh?
They have been an inspiration for me, and not just because of they're feisty and they're smart, but they're also a really beautiful animal. And I think the way that I've always been really drawn to feathers and wings, and the way that their wings fold up together is really beautiful. And so I think I've tried to capture that in my work as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being so generous to let us use your image. And I think it's probably part of, you know, drew people into the show today to get to see that. So I really want to say thank you for being generous, and thank you for your story. And I really appreciate that you were able to call in.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take one of our emails, because we've got some really wonderful ones. This is a Raven story from a fellow named Don, and he says, I was out running up in Bear Valley, and an eagle started circling overhead, apparently eyeballing my little miniature Australian Shepherd. A raven swooped down and landed on the road in front of us and hopped and flew along for a while, cawing away until the eagle moved on. So he was either saving the dog from the eagle or waiting for a scrap. It definitely felt more like the raven was protecting us. What do you think, Lisa? Are we anthropomorphizing here?
Well, it's possible. There are tons of stories, especially here in Alaska, where people they see a raven on a tree and they think they're being given a signal that you need to go take the trail to the right. Mm-hmm. Or so there's a lot of anecdotal mm-hmm. stories about that. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're so smart.
Yeah, yeah.
And eagles have been known to take small pets. So
yes, I remember reading about that, you know, like a little tiny fluffy dog being mm-hmm. lifted right off. Yeah. So no understanding of why it might want to protect a dog, but that they just might get that way sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're so smart. I mean, the raven may have been bored and thought, mm-hmm. well, I'm going to try this. And
this might be interesting. Yeah. Yeah. We've still got lots of calls and emails coming in, and do want to remind folks, if we don't get to your call or your email, please post it on alaskapublic.org under the Raven Story show promo, because people would love to hear your stories. I'd like to welcome Brian onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I want to thank you for doing this show. Ravens are one of my favorite animals, and certainly one of the things I enjoy most about Anchorage.
Me too.
This time of year, my understanding is that the birds have paired off and that they're on nests, and that the birds we see are what I'd call bachelor birds. And I noticed that they really vocalize a lot. They get on a pole, and they just seem to be talking to themselves, carrying on this long monologue of interesting vocalizations. I call it punking or clunking. Sometimes I'll imitate it, and they get interested in that. And I've had them actually follow me, seeming intrigued with the sound I make. Are the birds we see now single birds, or are they can they be mixed with those that are still in pairs, or are the pairs kind of hidden away now?
Well, let's go to Lisa. What do you think, Lisa?
Okay, it's going to be a combination of both. You're right. Ravens they're courting now. They're establishing their pairs or renewing pairs that are already established. And this time of year, for pairs that already have nests, they're maintaining them, making sure they're going to last for this coming season. And the females are bulking up with food so they can lay eggs. And
a lot of Cheetos right now.
A lot of Cheetos, yeah. And they typically don't lay eggs until March, but it's getting close. And so the birds that you hear calling can either be males that are announcing to other ravens that that's their territory and they don't want to share it. Or it could be single birds that are announcing, "I'm available. Come check me out.
Check me out. I'm hot stuff." Have you read anything in the research about any scientists trying to communicate with ravens and repeating their sounds or anything like that?
No, I haven't read anything per se about it, but they're very curious birds too, in addition to being intelligent. So it wouldn't surprise me that they would, if they hear a sound that you're making and they're interested in
and they like it,
they're gonna follow you. Or I think you were mentioning earlier that you've heard some stories of ravens picking up human words.
Yes.
And that's definitely that they think this is a cool sound. My grandmother used to have a home down in Oregon where they did a lot of logging, and there were plenty of stories of ravens that would sit in the top of trees saying, "Timber, 3, 2, 1. And it was, it's just a sound that they liked, and they picked it up.
So. So they must really have really good skill at mimicking. I mean, they've got a great ear. They've got a great ability to make the sound come out just the way mm-hmm. they hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's evidence of ravens, too, picking up calls of raptors or birds that potentially could have them for lunch, and they'll imitate, say, a red-tailed hawk call or a golden eagle call to kind of, maybe fool the raptors that they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, there's no raven here. This is mm-hmm. another eagle or right. a hawk here. Yeah. Well, thank you, Brian, for your call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'd like to go to Scott. Hi, Scott. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Thank you very much. I'm really enjoying your show.
Hey, and I appreciate you holding for so long.
That's okay. I know there's a lot of people wanting to call, so I have a really quick raven story. If you live in Alaska, or in Anchorage in particular, you got to love the ravens. There's just so many, and they're just, like a previous guest said, they're just always messing with something.
Uh-huh. And
so
you like that?
I was sitting downtown at the New Sagaya restaurant last summer, and I was eating my lunch in my car. And I noticed a raven standing on the roof of a building, a house right near the parking lot. And it's looking around, big, big raven. And it's looking around, and then it would drop down and go into a garbage can, a regular round garbage can at the base of the building. And then it would look around a little bit up and fly back up again and look around and then fly back down into the garbage can. About 2 or 3 times it does this, very wary and looking around. And I expected to see garbage start flying. Because you see ravens just dig through garbage.
Right.
So it comes up about the 4th time out of this garbage can with a McDonald's hamburger bag that had been thrown in there with the top folded, like you would carry the bag. And this raven's got this bag in its beak, and it picks up out a big raven, picks up out of this garbage can, and flies off with this hamburger bag in its beak. And I watched it. It flew a long ways before it disappeared.
Wow.
I'm just thinking that it's a garbage can. It's got to smell like garbage. And how this bird would know bag over anything else, I can't imagine.
That's a great story, Scott.
Another one more thing before I go. Imagine if ravens were 4 feet tall.
Ooh.
How different Alaska would be.
Now, that's a mind game. And I guess to some creatures, they look 4 feet tall. And, I mean, that would be that really blows my mind to think about walking out into the parking lot and seeing a raven standing by your car. You might just give it up, right? Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to call. I really appreciate it. We've got so many folks that want to tell stories. I'm going to open up another one of these emails. This is a story from a fellow who says, I had a friend in Bethel with domestic geese. The ravens would tease them, making mock goose noises, coaxing them to the edge of their pen, and then another raven would swoop down from the wires overhead and steal their food. I saw there's a video online of a raven irritating an eagle that has a piece of food. Mm-hmm. And it's like the eagle knows that if it leaves this food, the raven's going to get it, so it won't leave the food. But the raven is pulling on him, mm-hmm. and eventually the eagle flies away and leaves the food for the raven. So mm-hmm. it's successful for them, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they can be very persistent.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's a story from Fairbanks. Years ago, a local sprint musher was out with a small team of new dogs and having a hard time finding a leader to get her home. Evidently, a neighborhood raven had been watching, and after a number of false starts, as she started with another combination, the raven flew down right in front of her leaders and flew low along the trail, even turning into her narrow access trail and into her dog yard, leading the team home. The raven flew up onto a nearby tree. Mission accomplished. What do you think about that?
That's wonderful.
It's really a charming story. Someone mm-hmm. should actually do a children's story on that right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Let's see. Let me see if we can do another. What haven't we talked about that we really want? Oh, here's a fun one. This is from Gail. Ravens like soda crackers. I used to work in the City Hall building on the 8th floor and would put soda crackers on the ledge outside my window. I would see them fly by and pick up the crackers. We have been putting meat scraps on our back porch, and they have come and picked them up. Well, people like them, and I guess, I mean, what would you say about feeding them? I think they're going to get food anyway, you know?
Yeah, they are. That's one thing about Anchorage is there's a lot of food available. I guess if you have pets in your home or that you let outside, it'd be good to be careful about feeding the larger birds, because they can be they can make havoc too, especially if they recognize your home as a regular feeding ground.
So you say don't leave dog food outside, that sort
meat,
of thing?
Or meat scraps. That can also cause issues during the time of year when we have bears around. So you don't want to invite other...
You might be a marked house.
Right.
So ravens are only, you know, 26 inches long, but a bear is a lot bigger. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they are fun to have them come in and observe them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to read one more of our emails from Mike. He's talking about mobbing behavior. I've only been in Alaska a little over a year, and I love to go birding. Do ravens or magpies here in Alaska mob bald eagles or other raptors to drive them away? I've seen mugoles do that out on Potter Marsh to herd an eagle away from young. And he also notes for our listeners that he's a member of the Anchorage Storytelling Guild, and there's a wealth of raven stories up here, and he's just really excited about raven stories. So, well, we talked a little bit about, you know, you talked about herding
the rough-legged hawk.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So that is something that they do.
Yeah, mobbing is definitely a corvid behavior, and smaller songbirds do that too. So if there's a predator or a potential predator, they'll group together, and they'll either with calls or with flying, they'll try and drive that larger animal away.
You know, that speaks to intelligence too, because there's cooperation going on, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is not just single actors, but, you know.
Right. And usually they have specific calls for whatever kind of danger there is. So they'll alert the neighboring ravens or even other birds that there's an eagle in the area, or there's a wolf in the area, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Call.
Well, we're going to take another call, but when we come back, let's talk about the vocalizations, because I think a lot of people have curiosity about that. Angela, I'd like to welcome you to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I called in earlier. I was the one that referenced Heinrich, something that somebody had mentioned about the little dog, and they're wondering if the raven was possibly protecting the dog.
Right.
It reminded me of something I had read about ravens and wolves have had a really long kinship, and they've been seen hunting alongside and assisting the wolves. They would actually sit down and distract the prey and, like, peck at its eyes and its head in order for it to make it easier for the wolves to bring it down, and then they would both, you know, feast on it afterwards. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So cooperating with other species to hunt.
Well, yeah, specifically the wolves, which is why I feel like it was probably protecting the dog, because it's a helper.
Yeah. That's great. And actually, I've seen references to that in some of the literature, too. So we'll probably try to talk a little bit more about that. So thank you, Angela. I'm glad you brought it up, because it was one of the things I wanted to make sure we talked about, ravens and wolves. So thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for the program.
You're welcome. And thanks for participating. That's great. So what can we tell folks? We've got, you know, about 10 minutes. Let's deal with some of those vocalization questions. I did some work. You said there was a new study in November. Why don't you tell us about that? It was European, but it had to do with communication.
Yeah, it was European. They documented that ravens actually use gestures in association with their calls to spread information, and that's something that people have known anecdotally for forever, but they finally decided to do a scientific
so it's like on. One of those things that might be in legend. People mm-hmm. talk about it in legend, but it hadn't actually been documented in science.
Right.
And mm-hmm. now it is
so that when a raven, say, wants to tell its neighbor that there's a good carcass down the road, turn left, turn right, they'll use their calls and then wing gestures to describe the location and the occurrence.
So now I can imagine all these people out in Anchorage watching ravens going, is that a left or is that a right? you know, here's something I learned, that Corvus corax is the scientific name of the raven.
Right.
And corax means croaker in Greek. So that sounds like they croak, you know. It sounds like a fitting name for them.
It is, very much so. And they there's a lot of research done on their vocalizations, and no one has been able to tell precisely, you know, the number of calls or variations that they have. They have at least 30 different types of calls, and it, you know, it could be an alarm call, it can be a greeting call, or a call just for their mate, or just for their kids. And then it also varies depending on where they are, where they live. So the birds in Anchorage may have a different dialect than the ones in Fairbanks versus the ones that you find down in Washington State. So there's a ton of variation.
Wow. You know, I don't want to put you on the spot and make you sound like a raven, but do you ever do that?
I have to admit, I do. I have talked to ravens before.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Will you give us a few examples? but while you're thinking about that, I'm going to just throw this out, and you can get ready for that, because we'd love to have a raven call if we could. some of the research, you know, this is, again, Bernd Heinrich's book. The flight call of ravens sounds kind of like rap or crap, K-R-A-P-P or R-A-P-P. And, you know, this is, I would say, not definitive, but suggestive that is a flight call. Mm-hmm. Another one was kind of an R-U-H sound, roo. And that was identified as a place indicating call used by young to alert the mother to where they are, or to say, hey, I'm hungry, bring some food over here. Mm-hmm. Craw was craw or prook or crook or quark or crook was kind of a defending food sound. Grow was when another bird was in the area. Now, I don't sound like a raven, I know. but I wanted to share, at least scientists have been trying to figure this out. So what can you tell us about that?
They're trying to categorize the calls, because a lot of songbirds do have particular calls that mean, you know, one thing. So like a chickadee, the male has a song that he does to announce territory or to get a mate. And they have an alarm call, just like, and then they have a contact call, and And so scientists have been trying to categorize raven calls, but they tend to be very intricate and varied. So.
And then, like you said, those different dialects, so that even if you think you're onto something, it might not sound like what you think it should sound like because it's a local dialect.
Right. And there are variations. There are certain calls that just the young do, and they typically lose those calls once they become adults. The adults usually discourage them from either begging calls or other contact calls because they don't want to alert other predators or other ravens that there's a young bird around.
Right.
And there are some calls that just the females do, and that's partially to indicate that they're a female. And then some calls that just the males do.
So. Interesting. Are there social calls? Are there just, I was reading one story where they called it Miller time, at the end of the day when they've been out to all the malls and they've been to the rib joints and the Chinese food places and gotten the noodles and everything, that they just kind of gather just before they fly off. And she called it Miller time. And I wondered if there's any kind of socializing that ravens tend to do. I mean, are there calls related to their socializing? Do you know?
There are definitely. And they can either be, if they're having fun, they have free time, they're just hanging out, or if they're trying to disseminate information.
Mm-hmm.
So, and typically, when you see big groups of ravens, it's often the younger ravens. It's not the adults or the mated pairs, because typically the mated pairs prefer to be by themselves. They don't really tolerate the youngsters.
So would we be seeing the juvenile delinquents? Is that what we're
seeing? If you want to put it that way, yeah. And it's similar to, a lot of animals, the young, teenager type, there's a lot of learning that goes on. And then there was a caller that mentioned earlier that he saw the ravens that were, soaring and flying. And part of that is showing off for potential mates. And look how fast I am. Look how brave I am.
So, I'll be a great mate.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They mate for life.
They can. Absolutely.
I was curious about, when I think about mating for life, I'm thinking, are we talking 20 years? Well, they can live to be 20 years.
They can.
I saw one reference to a bird that they had watched and studied, and it had lived to 44 years.
Mm-hmm.
But would it be more normal to be in the 20-year range?
Yeah, 15 to 20 is more average. So, they're susceptible to being eaten by other animals. Or, like, there's one caller that mentioned they got electrocuted. Sometimes they get into issues with stuff that we've created, like running into cars or buildings and getting caught by traps. So there's definitely dangers out there for them. But a successful raven, one that's really smart, has its stuff in order, they can live a long time.
I'm remembering an election here years and years ago that was delayed, or power went out in the middle of the election, and later we heard that it was a raven, which seemed like a made-up story, but it wasn't. It was true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of crazy. So, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is already over. There's so much tomorrow. Please, folks, put your stories on alaskapublic.org and share them, because people want to hear them. I'd like to thank Lisa Peugeot from the U.S. Geological Survey and from Bird TLC. We didn't even get to Bird TLC. I'd like to thank Shara Doris, who shared her artwork with us on our website. Next week on Hometown Alaska, your host will be Shelley Wade. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media, and Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for sharing your stories about ravens today. I really loved it. And thank you for listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.